This morning, we are going to use a passage. I feel like I've never actually done a sermon from this book before. Now, some people who track this kind of stuff may be able to go back and figure out that I have. I don't track it that much. But we're going to be looking at a passage from the book of Haggai today. Haggai is, if you're going to follow this in an actual Bible and not on an app, Haggai is actually the third from the last book of the Old Testament. That may help you find it, or it might not. I don't know. But we're going to be looking at a passage from Haggai. Now, a little bit of backstory on Haggai. He is a prophet from the period after the children of Israel are allowed to leave Babylon and come back to the promised land. So this is in the period of Nehemiah, that time frame where the children of Israel were freed to go home to the promised land after their captivity and exile in Babylon. And so we are going to be looking at this text this morning. Haggai, as a prophet, has risen up at the hand of God to address the children of Israel because of some of their failings with regard to the temple. Okay. So when the children of Israel first come back to the promised land, one of the things they are instructed to do is to rebuild the temple, which had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar when he conquered Judah. Now, how many of you have ever started a project that you did not finish? Okay, some of you actually right now are going, I am actually in the process right now of not finishing a project that I've started. Some of you, and there's a lot of different reasons this happens. You get busy with other things, or the project, once you get into it, seems to be more than you bargained for. There's a lot of reasons. But for our purposes this morning, the children of Israel have come back to the promised land, and of course, thrilled to be back, so thankful that God has returned them home, that when they get back, they eagerly begin working on this new temple, and they get the foundation laid, and then that's it. They get started on it, and then they stop. And so they have now been there for some time, and the temple has been left just a foundation. And so God is a little displeased with this, since the temple in Jerusalem, obviously, was where his presence dwelled. And so he is very unhappy with that. And so Haggai has risen up as a prophet to address this. And so we're going to pick up in Haggai. There's only two chapters in Haggai, but we're in Haggai chapter 1. We're going to start in verse 4 today. And I want you to listen as Haggai kind of begins his message to the children of Israel with a question. He says, is it time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house, and he's referencing the temple, lies desolate? Okay. Now, there is obviously some nuance in the terminology paneled houses. A lot of the commentary suggests that this is a reference to the wealthy people who would have had fancy paneling on their house. Some commentary suggests that the panels there are actually references to roofing, that those of you who have built houses and you've put your roofs on it. But what he is addressing here is a problem that probably sounds very familiar to us, is that what has happened is the children of Israel who have come back to the promised land have come back to nothing. Their homes are gone, everything's gone, so they've come back and they've started work on the temple, but at some point in this process, they've realized, wow, I've got stuff to do. I got to get my own house, and I got to get a roof on my house. And then once I get a roof on my house, I need to earn a living, so I got to go get a job. And so maybe I'm farming, or maybe I'm doing something else. And so you guys know how this works. The temple gets started, and then at some point in the process, the busyness of their lives takes over, and all of a sudden, what gets left out? The temple does. Yeah, God does. This is very familiar to us. We may not like to admit it, but this is very familiar to us. When life gets busy and life gets complicated, it is very common for God to be the one who gets pushed out of the equation, right? When something comes up in the schedule and it's like, well, when are we going to do this? A lot of times, well, I don't have any time to do it. So when do we schedule? Well, we'll schedule on Sunday. I can't miss work, but I can miss church. Or you know what? I got an extra bill this month, and man, things are kind of tight. What am I going to do? I'll miss my offerings to the church this month because, I mean, let's be honest, God doesn't really need my money anyway. I mean, this is not an uncommon tale that when things get tight in our schedules and tight in our wallets and life gets busy, it is not uncommon for God to be the one who kind of gets pushed to the side. And so this story probably should resonate with a lot of us. Because we have, if it's not something you're currently doing in your life, you could probably think back to a time when you did this. I remember having a professor in college who used to warn us as Bible college students. He was one of my favorite professors, and he got up before class one day and he was talking. He said, just as a practical note for all of you Bible college geniuses out there, and he used to like to use that word in a derogatory sense. He said, be wary of becoming so busy being Bible college students that you don't communicate with God. Now, that seemed to be an inane thing to say because half of my classes were Bible classes. And so I spent most of my time each semester studying the Bible. So how in the world could one get really busy studying the Bible so much so that you did not have time for God? It didn't take me long to figure that out. And in truth, there has probably been a period in the history of the church where the church had a tendency to try to keep people so busy doing church stuff that they didn't have time for God stuff. And some of you might go, well, Stuart, how can there be something that's church stuff that's not God stuff? Do I really have to explain that to anybody in this room? No. I don't have to explain that. It's sometimes we get so busy. And you think about in the letter to the seven churches. You remember what the angel said to the Ephesian church? I know your deeds. You're doing some great stuff. But what have you done? You've lost your first love. Wait a minute. You just said you love what we're doing. But it is possible to get so busy doing church stuff that you actually aren't doing God stuff. And that it becomes a routine and it becomes something for the community, and it becomes something for our own edification, and wow, we want our church to be big so everybody will think about how awesome our church is, and somehow God can get pushed out of that. And so this professor was telling us, he said, don't fall into this trap, especially those of you going into ministry, that you get so busy in ministry that at some point you push God out of your career. And it happens. It does happen. And so we get this. There's a time for yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while my house doesn't even have walls. You guys have laid a foundation, nothing else. But you're all living in your nice houses, and that's fantastic. All right, next verse, please. We're going to look at verses 5 through 7 now. So this is what Haggai says after posing the question. He says, now therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Consider your ways. Guys, take a second and look at your life and have a moment of self-reflection. Any of you ever do that? Any of you just have sit down sometimes and kind of reflect on your life? Haggai says, guys, the Lord says, stop for a minute and take inventory. Consider your ways. He says, you have sown much, but you harvest little. You eat, but there's not enough that you're satisfied. You drink, but there is not enough to become drunk. That may not be a bad thing. Some of you are going, why would he even say that? It's Old Testament. It's an Old Testament. He says, you put on clothing, but you're not warm enough. And those of you who earn wages and put into a purse with holes. Does that resonate with anyone in this room? It's like I make money and I put it in the bank, and then I go look at the bank statement and where's all my money? It's gone. Where does it all go? Haggai says, listen, people of Israel, I want you to take inventory of what's happened to your life as you have pushed God out of it. I want you to take inventory of what's happened in your life. You guys, you're going out. You farmers, you're sowing, but you're not harvesting much. Your harvest doesn't match your effort. Yeah, you've got enough to eat, but it's not enough for you to be satisfied. You're always hungry. You drink, but there's not enough for you to get drunk. You put on clothing, but when it's cold, it's not enough for you to stay warm. I mean, you've got clothes, but they're not effective. And when you go out and earn money, it's never enough. Now, what is fascinating about this statement is that sounds very familiar to us. We get caught in this thing called the rat race, right? And it's like we seems like the harder we work and the busier we get, the less satisfied we are, right? Does anybody ever make enough money? No? No? Now, some of you are sitting here going, oh, Stuart, you know, if I made this much money, that would be enough. No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. And you know why I know it wouldn't? Because it happens all the time. When you get a paycheck and you're like, oh, this is how much I have to spend. And so if you get a raise at work, what happens to the paycheck? Do you spend the same amount? No, you spend more because you're making more now, right? Because you sit there and go, oh man, see, I need a nicer car. I need a nicer car because I've driven this raggedy car, you know. And so as soon as I get enough money, I'm going to get a nicer car, or maybe I'm going to get a bigger house, or you know what, I'm going to live in a different neighborhood, or I'm going to have nicer this or nicer that, and I need some more clothes. And it never fails. We get in this endless cycle. And yet, it's never enough. It's never enough. It doesn't seem like we ever get in a place where we stop and go, you know what? This is fantastic. I have reached all that I need. I am satisfied with what I have. I'm satisfied with my house. I'm satisfied with my vehicle. I'm satisfied with my job. I have known a number of people over the years that took a promotion, that the promotion made them miserable. Do any of you know anyone who's ever taken a promotion that the promotion made them miserable? And it was like, you know what? If I could just move one rung higher and get that next pay level, and then you get to that next rung and you realize, I hate this job. I had a friend one time who was working as a youth minister, and he was in I wouldn't say a tiny church, but it was a fairly small church for a full-time youth minister. He was making enough to live, and that depends on how you define living, but he was making enough. But he got a call from this church, and this church said, hey, we know some people that know you. We've heard a lot of good things about you. We would like you to come work in our church as the youth minister. And they said, we're willing to pay you this amount. And he went, awesome. And he took the job on the phone. So, okay, I'll come up. So he goes up and he interviews. Now, the first rule in ministry is if a church is willing to overpay you, what is it? What is the normal suspicion you get when someone's willing to pay you more than you are probably worth? There's a train wreck in progress that someone is trying to pay you to come be a part of. And so this guy left and he went to this new church. Well, immediately upon arriving at the new church, he figured out that the cost of living in the place he had just moved was exponentially more expensive than where he had been before, which meant that his raise was actually not as much as he thought it was. because rent costs more where he moved to, groceries cost more, gas costs more, everything costs more. Then he found out why they paid so much to have a youth minister. The people were awful. The kids were rotten. The parents hated him. The parents hated everybody. He didn't bother to ask, what happened to your last four youth ministers? The last four youth ministers in this church had lasted a grand total of, count them, 14 months. I just saw somebody do that. Now, you do the math. That is not long. That is 3.5 months on average. Now, I will tell you the averages get messed up because one guy lasted 7 months. But he didn't ask any of that. He just went because they were going to pay him a lot of money. And I remember talking to him on the phone, and he says, you know, there are a lot of passages about what happens if you chase money. I said, yeah. He goes, I forgot every one of them until yesterday. He said, when I got home from work, and I thought, what have I done? Does that sound familiar to any of you? Where we get busy on that wheel, and we run in a circle, and we chase all sorts of things, and they all seem awesome, and yet God is standing there going, really? You're chasing all that stuff, and you're not even interested in me at all. And by the way, I have been what has been sacrificed frequently for you to get on that wheel. And so God says, look, consider your ways. Look at what you're doing. You guys are running in circles chasing satisfaction. And where's the only place satisfaction comes from? It comes from God. Right? Satisfaction comes from God. And he says, look, the reason all this is happening is because you've cut me out. You've cut me out. And you're so busy trying to make a life for yourself and what you think is going to make you happy. And he says, look at yourselves. Consider what your life is like. You guys are never satisfied. Nothing's ever enough. And it's because you've cut me out. All right, verse 7. All right, so as we move into this next section, Haggai says this. Thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. So he repeats that statement. He says, I want you to go up to the mountains. I want you to bring wood, and I want you to rebuild the temple, that I may be pleased with it and be glorified, says the Lord. Next verse, please. You look for much, but behold, it becomes too little. When you bring it home, I blow it away. Why, declares the Lord of hosts? Because my house, which lies desolate, which each of you runs to his own house. All right, let's go back to verse 7, please. Thank you. So I want you to look at how this text is phrased here. He says, consider your ways, go up to the mountain, bring wood, and rebuild the temple, that I may be pleased with it and glorified. Now, I want you to go back in a moment in your mind to when you first became a Christian and you started thinking about, man, all the things that you and God were going to do together. And you put down a foundation, man. You were really passionate about this project. You were going to build. Everything was going to be about God. And then you know what happened? You got busy with life. And life is busy. You know what's funny about, I've talked to people who are retired. And you know what they tell me about retirement? It's busier. Now, I'm not really sure how exactly that works. I look forward to finding out someday. But you know what? I think back, we were just having this conversation the other night with some friends of ours. Me and Stephanie, we were recounting our days when Caleb and Sam were like 10 and 8, 11 and 9, 12 and 10, that age range. My life was so hectic because one of them always had to be somewhere. One of them always had to be somewhere. There was ball practice, or there was some other thing at school, or there was something going, and we only had two. I don't know how, if you have more than two, you don't just pay someone to be your personal Uber. And I remember it's like, okay, we would sit down, me and Stephanie would sit down in the morning, and we would literally sit down and schedule who was picking up who and who was transferring whom to what place at what time. And I've got a meeting at 2, so if you could pick the kids up from school, maybe if you could drop one off where I work, then you could take the other one someplace, and then when I finish my meeting, I could take that one here. And it would cut. And you remember, I remember when I was a kid, we always ate supper as a family. It was like 6 o'clock, you know, we'd sit down, and Dad would turn on the news. And then you weren't allowed to talk. And we would sit there and we would all be at the table together. And when my kids were like 11 and 12, we never did that. Because they were their schedules and our schedules. It's like, hey, what are we doing for supper? Whatever you can. There's something in the, there's some leftovers in the fridge. Hey, there's a can of soup in the cabinet. You know how to microwave that. You know, it is like just constantly trying to keep up with stuff. And on those rare occasions that we could sit down together, you know what we talked about? What was going to be going on the next day? Hey, who's going to take me here? I got to be at this place. Oh, did I remember to tell you that we have a party I'm supposed to be at? No. Oh, and you got to take me to get a present. That's always fun. Last minute. Does that sound familiar to any of you? You remember those days? And so your life gets so hectic. And I think back to it. I'm like, man, it was so frantic and so busy. And I thought, you know what? When my kids go off to college, it's going to be so much better. It's just different. I don't know that it's better. It's just different. I'm still busy. Because now that they're gone, off to college part of the year, guess what? I've got involved with more stuff. Because I had all this extra time, and what did I do? I filled it up. Does that sound like any of you? It's just we fill up the time. Haggai says, look, consider your ways. You need to stop for a minute. You need to go up to the mountain and get the wood and rebuild the temple. And for us as Christians, there is some real imagery in this text that is really important, because there are a lot of people today who have a relationship with Christ. I'll just leave it at that. They have a relationship with Christ, and their temple, because remember, the temple now is what? It's what? What is the temple now? You. You're the temple now. He lives in you. And so there are a lot of people who have a relationship with God whose temple is in various states of construction, and an alarming number of them are unfinished. We meant well at one point. We started construction on it. You know, we got the foundation down. Maybe you're like, nah, man, I got some walls up. I never got the roof on though. You don't understand, man. I got busy and I could only do so many things at one time. And so what happened is that over the years we have this temple where God resides, but it's not finished. It's, in some cases, desolate. How many of you have ever invited or had someone in your family invite company over to your house? And when you found out company was coming, what did you immediately look around the house and say? Oh, this place is a mess. Now, I tease my wife relentlessly about this. because she worries 10 times more than I do about the condition of our house when someone comes over. Because I'm a very simple person, and I have a very simple philosophy. If you come in my house, and you look around and go, this house is too dirty for me. You know the door that you just came in? You are welcome to turn around and go right back out it. My wife doesn't think that way.
She eyes.
Is that what that's called? Company eyes? And men, most of the men in this room are going, yeah, dude, I'm with you. I'm with you. But you know what? It's like, I have to tell you this. My mom came, mom and dad came over once, and mom was going to go to the restroom, and we have a bathroom that you have to go through our bedroom to get to, and the one in the hallway was occupied, so mom went in there. And she saw my side of the bedroom. And she came out, and she looked at me, and she goes, I raised you better than that. And I said, obviously not. To which my father started laughing. And then my mother said this. She said, you need to clean that room. And I said, you know what? Do you remember when I was growing up, you told me when I had a house of my own, I could keep it as messy as I wanted to? She went, yeah. And at that point, my father got up and left the room. And I went, well, guess whose house this is? And she just went, she looked at my wife and she goes, how do you live with him? And then I left the room because I didn't want to hear the answer. But you guys know what I mean, right? It's like when somebody's coming over, it's like, man, I want to get this house just right. And I want to get this, you know, I got to make sure the guest room is clean and I'm going to dust. And because some of you only dust when company's coming over. You know, so you're going to dust, you're going to clean up, and you're going to hide the dirty dishes, and you're going to get the place looking really nice. You want to make sure everything looks perfect. So let me ask you a question. How much work have you done on the place that the creator of the universe resides in your life? Do you spend more time cleaning for a guest in your house than you have preparing for the God of the universe who comes and dwells in your life? Do you worry more about what a guest thinks about your house than what God thinks about his dwelling place? God, look at the house I've made for you. It didn't have a roof. Yeah, I'm going to get to that. It doesn't have walls. I'm going to get to that. Well, at least it does have a floor. See? Welcome home. That's what the children of Israel have done. They have been brought back into the promised land by God, and he gave them one thing. Guys, one thing. Get my temple built. No. We'll start it. We started the project, but no, we don't have time. We don't have time to finish it. All right, next slide, please. So we go back into verse 9. He says, you look for much. And that sounds like us, right? Because we live in America, so we have great expectations, right? We have high expectations. You look for much, but behold, it comes to little. You know why? Because when you bring it home, I blow it away. Now, just take a minute and soak that image in. As Haggai is speaking to the people on behalf of God, and God says, look, here's what I want you to tell them. I want you to tell them, you know, in your life, when you do all this work and it doesn't seem to come to anything, it doesn't seem to come to much, here's what I want you to tell them. I want you to tell them it's because of me. Because when they bring this mess home, I'm the one who blows it away. Why? Declares the Lord of hosts. A reasonable question. Why am I doing this? Do you want to know why I'm doing this? You want to know why all your work doesn't seem to amount to anything? You want to know why? I'll tell you why, declares the Lord of hosts. Because of my house, which lies desolate. while each of you runs to his own house. He says, you want to know why I'm not allowing you to be satisfied? You want to know why I'm not allowing you to accumulate things? You want to know why all this work doesn't seem to be for anything in particular? It's because of me. And you know why? Because you have ignored my house. You've ignored my house. And you have convinced yourself that I'm going to live in a shack while you live in a mansion. And the Lord of hosts says, that's not how this thing works. That's not how this works. Because of my house, which lies desolate. While each of you, you're running around to your own house. Therefore, because of you, the sky has withheld its dew and the earth has withheld its produce. It's called for a drought on the land, on the mountains, on the grain, on the new wine, on the oil, on what the ground produces, on men, on cattle, and on all the labor of your hands. He said, this is what I'm doing because of you. I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by the correlations between some of the stuff we see in the Old Testament. Things like what's happening with Haggai and things that are happening in our world today. Now, I don't like drawing a whole lot of comparisons between Israel and America, because the truth is, if you're really going to compare Israel to something, it probably should be the church, not the nation. And I think a lot of people would probably gravitate to the nation and go, well, you know, this is a perfect analogy of what's going on in our country, right? But I'm not that worried about what's happening in the country. Some of you are like, well, you should be. I'm not. And the reason I'm not is I'm not going to be on this earth that much longer anyway. And when I get to heaven, they're not going to check my flag to see what nationality I am to get in. God's not particularly interested in that. But there does seem to be a correlation with the church. As God's church has become more and more interested with societal acceptance and not offending people and inclusion, as we have been more interested in satisfying ourselves than in satisfying God. Hey, we've got these nice buildings and we have comfortable seats and we have central air and we've got all this stuff to make church really nice and convenient and easy. And you know what? It's still not enough to get us to come, because I'm really busy. I'm really busy. I got 1,000 other things I need to be doing. I don't know. And we wonder, why is church attendance in this country declining? And you know what we want to do? We want to blame it on everything in the world except the real culprit. You know who the real culprit is? The church. We're the culprit. We want to blame it on a political party or on this person, or on that person, or this ideology, or this is all going to... I don't think it's any of that stuff. The church grew under Nero, right? The church has grown and survived under some of the worst people in history. And so when we look at the church and go, oh, well, you know, there's all these issues and all these problems, and you know whose fault it is? It's their fault. It's that group's fault. It's that group's fault. We want to blame everybody. But here's the question. What is the condition that God's people have left God's temple in? And is that the reason that for all our work and all our toil and all our labors, it doesn't seem like we're achieving much? Church attendance in this country has declined steadily for the last 2 decades. and it seems to be intensifying. And what has happened to the church in the most recent incarnation is because of the pandemic, a lot of people got really comfortable watching church at home. And they went, you know what, I don't need to go to church. I can sit at home and do church now. Because really, isn't that the opposite game? To make being a Christian as easy as possible? I mean, isn't that really the object of the game? I mean, isn't that the object of everything in our lives? Every invention is meant to make our life easier, right? You know, I remember having to get up off the couch and walk to the bookshelf and get an encyclopedia and actually look up what something was. And what was worse, you had to be able to spell it to look it up. There is nothing more entertaining today than watching someone who is probably under the age of 25 in a place with no internet service. And they're just like, I can't find anything. Information has just disappeared. Everything in our life has been about making life easier and simpler, and yet life seems to be getting more and more complicated. And for the church, I think that's true. As God's people, there's a really important statement that Haggai has for you today. Can we back up to verse 7? Consider your ways, church. Consider your ways. Individually and as a group, we need to look at the life that we're living in. We need to say, you know what? What is the condition? Let me just take a minute here and consider my ways. Let me stop for a minute and take inventory and ask myself a question. What is the condition of the temple that God dwells in my life? And do I worry more about the condition of my house when company comes over than I worry about the condition of the place that the Lord of hosts and the creator of all things dwells in me? And why is that? Why do I worry about that one and not this one? Why am I so worried about financial stability and all these other things that I'm chasing in my life, and I'm not particularly worried about where God fits into any of it? And here's the answer most people would give you. Stuart, one of these days, when things slow down and I have time, I'm going to get that house fixed. How many of you have a project right now that you have been waiting to get fixed when things slow down? And things haven't slowed down. Chuck raised his hand. You got grandkids, Chuck. You got grandkids. And you go to their stuff, right? Yeah, keeps you busy. You know, it's like, it used to be my kids, now it's my grandkids. For my dad, it's, in some cases, great-grandkids. There's always stuff to do. There's always stuff going on. And it's like, man, when I get a chance, I'm going to get this fixed. So here's the question. How long will God wait? How long will he wait? I want to challenge you with something today. I am in no position to judge anybody's temple in this room except mine. Okay? That is not my purview. It's not my job. I'm not qualified to look at you and judge your temple. That's not what I was put on this earth to do. No one can be a better judge of the house you've built, God, than you. So I would suggest to you today that you follow the sage phrase that Haggai uttered to the children of Israel twice in this text. Consider your ways. Take a minute, stop and catch your breath, and look at your life and ask yourself a question. Have you built a dwelling that you're proud to have God stay in, dwell in, live in? Or when you look at the dwelling, do you go, man, you know, I've had God living in a house with no roof for like 10 years. This is kind of embarrassing. I need to get that fixed. I got some walls that need to be replaced. I've got some stuff that needs to be taken care of. I need to make sure that God is pleased with it and glorified by the dwelling I've created for him in my life. We ask the praise team to come and lead us in our communion hymn this morning. Again, my challenge for you today as we get ready to meet around the Lord's table is, Paul used to tell us, if a man, before a man partakes, let him examine himself. This morning as you get ready to partake, consider your ways, evaluate the condition of the house you've created for God.